Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name, of course, is Scotty Reed. Today's day is May 10th, 2016. It is a Tuesday afternoon here in the state of North Carolina. I hope that my voice finds you safe and sound behind these enemy lines of USA Inc. Tune in for the next hour as I will share with you news stories, information, as well as taking your calls. Anybody has any observations they would like to share, they could hit us up on the conference line or the studio line. The conference line is posted, and the studio line is 704-951-5030. There is a lot to talk about today, as there is a lot to talk about every day. But today, most of our main topics will focus on slave catching, associated brutality, and just senseless killings that go along with that profession. Want to take a look at Wilmington, Delaware, where there was an assassination. Well, I wouldn't call it assassination. The proper term would be execution of a black man who was wheelchair bound. I think they call those paraplegics or something like that. No use of his legs from the waist down whatsoever. And he was shot in quite like a, what do they call those, firing squad type line set up in front of him by Wilmington police. And, I mean, it was just merciless. No empathy whatsoever. I mean, you know, when I think about scientific studies and the studies that have shown that people classified as white in this system of injustice have a very low empathy level for non-white people, primarily black people. I mean, we actually have science to prove that, and that was on demonstration right there. I mean, no hesitation whatsoever. The family, I believe, is in the process of filing a lawsuit, but I want to look at this also deeper. The language that the family is using, in my opinion, I might be wrong about it, but in my opinion, they should be more codified in their communications. So I want to share some of the things that they allegedly said that's being reported by the media that's kind of uncodified and can hinder the family's quest for justice. I don't know if, you know, you can truly ever get justice when someone loses their life. So I guess seeking compensation for damages inflicted emotionally. I believe the man was also on Social Security. I think he was living in assisted living. I remember reporting on this story when it first broke last year. Was that last year? Let me just make sure. I believe it was last year, or perhaps it could have been two. Yeah, it was last year, September the 23rd, 2015. So that's not really even that long ago. All right. And so the new news to report, or the update to give you on this, is that the Wilmington Police Department, which investigated itself, has concluded their investigation, and we'll take a look to see what they found or what actions did they take. But anybody who's seen that cell phone video, it's like, I mean, I hate, you hate to share these videos because, you know, some people are sick and they get off on seeing these snuff films, especially where you have, you know, white people gunning down black people in the streets. You know, some people, man, they live vicariously through police officers, just like, you know, you hear parents living vicariously through their children in sports or whatever activity they put their children in at a very young age. And so, you know, some of these people, I believe they get off on seeing these type of videos and what have you, and they are, you know, dreaming, you know, fantasizing about, you know, these type of killings and what have you. There's some sick people in this country, or in this world, really, on this planet. But these officers, obviously, they have a brain defect or something. They just, you know, don't have any empathy. It's not or something. It is. They have a defective way of thinking. You know, I'm not a brain scientist or anything like that, but I know different areas of the brain deal with certain functions and, you know, like reasoning, like your emotions and, you know, even your what do they call that, you know, reflexes, where you just do stuff reflectively. These men, in my opinion, you know, there's something wrong with them. There's something wrong with them. I bet you if they took the empathy test, they would test real low for empathy. And should people like that be police officers? You know, so lots I could just go on and talk about on these related issues and, you know, make suggestions, which we've made suggestions in the past on this program that, you know, for those people who actually engage in the griminess, the grimy process of trying to affect change through local politics, through any type of politics, because that's what governs, that's what regulates these sort of things that's happening to people every day. And it's not going to go away on its own, and somebody has to step up. Not just somebody, but a whole lot of bodies need to step up, more than just what we've been seeing, you know, primarily with the young black youth and whatnot rising up. So it's a lot we could talk about there. One of the suggestions we put out there is giving these cops an empathy test, you know, or let's say applicants, giving them empathy tests. Even talked about it in terms of making that mandatory for anybody that's going to sit on in a jury box. Racism plays out everywhere and all people at activity, and so the only way to change those things is through changing laws till the revolution come. You know, some people sitting around waiting on that and preparing for that or the eventual collapse, you know. So and that's logical, that makes sense, but at the same time, you know, you have to also replace it with something that we need people skilled in, all people activity areas. So, you know, we're trying to bring relief to people today. We're not waiting on the revolution. We need, by any means necessary, as Malcolm said, to bring relief to people across this land. And so, you know, certain positions that have delegated so much power, the power of life and death in the individual's hands, you know, we have to be more, let's say, careful about who we allow to wear those badges and whatnot in this current system that we're all under. Also want to go back and share some North Carolina news that is related. The leader of the state NAACP held a press conference yesterday with members of three different families who were all victims of police violence and corruption. This particular press conference, which we shared on our YouTube channel, Black Talk Radio, we shared the conference. It was like about 30 minutes, 35 minutes. I watched it live. It was being streamed live. I made a recording and distributed it, because it didn't get any kind of, you know, news really, around here locally nor, nationally. But, these family members, two families were white and one family was black, all of them victims of a, what they're saying is a corrupt, brutal, out of control, sheriff's department. That is practicing racism and classism against the poor people of this county here in North Carolina. It's called Harnett County. And so definitely want to listen to Reverend Barber, who is the state leader for the North Carolina State NAACP. And as I listened to him speak yesterday, he was very, very codified. They were engaging in what I've heard counter-racist author Neely Fuller call showcasing, right? And, you know, as I thought when I first heard about that term, you know, what is racial showcasing? Well, you know, he gives his example of using, you know, like the game show. Well, what's that game show? The Price is Right, and they have the showcase, you know, items or people trying to win. And so it's like putting you out front. It's like making a celebrity out of you, or, you know, putting all the focus on you in terms of whatever. It happens all the time, whether it's in politics, entertainment. I mean, just, you know, people, they will showcase and what have you. And so I had asked the question years ago, well, what about if we started of using tactics that we know white supremacists use, but then reverse these tactics and showcase white people. I have actually done that, showcase white victims of police violence on social media pages. Even got some criticism for doing that. People say, oh, we don't care about, you know, Europeans getting killed by police or anything like that. Well, you know, to each your own, but I see a common enemy there. I see an issue that it's going to take everybody to resolve. And, you know, if we could resolve it ourselves as black people, we'd have been done it. Got a black president and still black people getting gunned down like animals in the street, like rabid dogs and things of that nature. So, I was checking out this press conference, studying Reverend Barber's language, which I thought was very codified, and how he disarmed any criticism that he may have received in the past and that somebody might level at him. I just thought the things that he was saying was very interesting. And so we're actually going to listen to that today. So I might end up going over an hour. That's why I only really posted two news stories. But I am reminded now that I do have an update to the story that we reported on yesterday and a correction. Michael Jordan and the HB2 bill, as it was reported yesterday. My source was the Google News feed, which those sources are usually vetted. If it comes across the Google News feed, then it's a trusted source. Somebody went through a lot of trouble to post a fake article that not only somehow got past the gatekeepers at Google and made it on the Google News feed. But they also, they elaborately constructed this site to make it really look like one of the mainstream sites, even so cited the article as being from the Associated Press and what have you. Well, it turns out that article was false. That was a false article. Somebody went through an elaborate hoax to say that Michael Jordan threatened to move the Charlotte Hornets if the HB2 bill was not overturned. And I talked about it yesterday, but guess what? When I make a mistake, I'm not one to try to hide it from anyone. And, you know, if you're going to be in a journalism business and you want people to find you credible, then you also have to come back and issue corrections when you have made a mistake. So I got like whole lots of people got on that article, because I was saying, like, if you heard it, the program yesterday, I was saying it's totally out of character for Michael Jordan. I've watched Michael Jordan since he started playing at UNC, University of North Carolina Basketball, won the championship, been following him. Of course, you know, he's been showcased in the media, especially in sports entertainment, known as one of the all-time greatest So I know this dude. I follow his career and whatnot. Being a fan of basketball, not so much a fan of him in his personal life. And I've never heard this man. In fact, he was asked, like I said yesterday, to endorse the former mayor of Charlotte, a black man by the name of Harvey Gantt, over a known racist white supremacist who had been sitting in the Senate, I believe, since the 1960s, you know, out of North Carolina, but in the U.S. Senate. And Michael Jordan was like, well, Republicans buy shoes and I don't want to offend anyone. So, you know, so he stayed true to his character. That was a false story. He did not speak out on a social political issue that's going on in North Carolina or anywhere on the planet, but I thought it was important that I would give that correction. Okay, now I do have some information before I jump into the main topic or the main story of the investigation into the police execution of Jeremy McDowell, concluding, and you know, again, police investigating themselves. I do have some station news, or I should say network news, to share. The reports went out this morning for our digital radio station, Black Talk Radio, providing you with new black media for the new millennium. Just this station, not all the other stations that are on the Black Talk Radio Network platform, but the reports went out. We saw a jump in total listenership from the prior month of March. This is April's. We saw a jump of over 77,000 unique listeners who tuned in to the station last night, for a total of 177,220. So that's 177,220 unique listens for the month of April. If you would like to get the breakdown of the what the individual programs, what their stats look like, again, this is information that is provided to contributors to the Black Talk Media Project, because, you know, we look at it as them being part owners. We are a nonprofit, the Black Talk Media Project, that is, and so we provide them with information so they can judge how, you know, their investment in black media for the new millennium is going and what have you. So, but just in general, last month, I mean, that's still down, because in January, December, we were seeing numbers above 200,000, drop down to 100,000 in March, and then now we're back up to 177,000. You know, if you find the media of the different programs on the station helpful to you in any kind of way, then chances are it might be helpful to somebody else. The reason why our people, in terms of, you know, the masses acting in a unified manner in the areas that they do act in, and then we scratch our heads and we wonder why black people is in the area of politics supporting a racist white supremacist with a long history of harming black men, women, and children by supporting various policies. And then all of a sudden, you know, she says, I was wrong on all counts, and now we believe she's really going to solve the problem. Well, that's because of black media. That's because of, you know, this showcase black radio hosts on white platforms. They may play black music, they may have black voices and what have you, but those are not black stations, all right? And media propaganda is warfare, all right? So if you believe that war is being waged on us, then we have to counter in every area that we possibly can. And so this network, all our media operations, that's what our primary mission is to combat that and recruit others and teach others on how to use technology to produce counter-racist propaganda. All right, so that's out. Tomorrow morning, the podcast will be going out, as well as some additional information on plans to increase the podcast download and what have you. So again, as always, do want to thank those who have become contributors to the network. Again, you know, just throwing out a number, those 177,000 people, the average listening hour, listening hours per session, we're about 1 hour and 25 minutes, which is pretty good when you compare that to the averages of terrestrial radio and how long a person tunes in at any given time to a station, or any length of time to a station. That's pretty good. And so, but you know, 177,000 people came across the radio stream, and if we just had a dollar from each of those individuals, just think of the budget we could have, the people we could hire, you know, in addressing black economics and unemployment and what have you. Man, we could really do a lot. So that is why we really value those who do contribute and believe in the vision, believe in the mission that we have here on this network, and of course through the Black Talk Media Project. Last month, this is last information, then we'll get into our stories. Last month, the fundraising totals again for the Black Media crowdfunding campaign in the month of April, let me just pull that up, we had 27 contributors who contributed up to, let me see, $450.42. So we want to thank those 27 people. Some gave more than once, as you know, they wanted the appreciation t-shirts that say Black radio stations matter, so they were already contributors, and then, you know, they wanted to get those shirts, so they made another contribution. So but that is 27 donors is the accurate figure there. So we definitely thank you. Though that's the few, providing for the many people who tune in to this station and visit the website and what have you. That's the few helping us do the very best that we can with the little bit that we do receive. So thank you. Last thing I wanted to share is that you will now be able to also get the podcast of all the programming on Black Talk Radio, this digital radio station, on our YouTube channel as well. By the way, that I've like clean up our broadcast, not really using copyrighted music, so no need to worry about people making copyright claims on your video and, you know, going through that whole process, and you have to claim fair use and what have you. So we're using royalty free music, and that really just, you know, makes it easier for me to put out as much media as possible. So if you are following us on, if you are a YouTube user, you can now get all the podcasts on our YouTube channel, Black Talk Radio Network. All right, so I believe that is pretty much it that I have to share in terms of network news. What I'm going to do at this moment is go ahead and take a station identification break. Also, share some beats with you from Sincere No Quarry, God Life Beats, and then we'll jump right into our main topic of the day. Remember, if you have any questions, any comments that you would like to share, give us a call at 704-951-5030. That is the studio line. The conference line number is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. Hit *6 and 1 to comment on air. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News on this Tuesday afternoon. Stay with us. We'll be back on the other side.
You had black people in the 1870s proclaiming that the era of racism was over, that people would no longer be judged based on their race or background in the 1870s. But do you know what happened in the 1870s? Blacks were disenfranchised. The votes were taken away. Black people were thrown physically out of state legislatures. Black people were terrorized from the voting polls and were not allowed to vote. Black people who had been buried in graveyards beside white folk, they had their bodies dug up and shipped somewhere else. In other words, you see, because you are integrated doesn't mean you cannot become disintegrated. And it took then 100 years up to the 1960s and 70s for black people to re-achieve again the things they had 100 years before. So there is no guarantee that because you have some kind of opportunities today, or because you're making some kind of progress today, that progress is guaranteed to you. In their interest that they be disenfranchised. And we are in exactly the same position today. When there is a group of white folk in America today who come to believe seriously that it is in their interest to remove opportunities from black folk and to disenfranchise us, then it will happen. And ladies and gentlemen, it is on the verge of happening today.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast. I'm going to go ahead and share the audio to this cell phone video. Now, I know there is another video if you want to compare it to something. The first thing that came to my mind in terms of understanding that racism certainly is in the fabric of this society. I mean, it was founded, a nation founded on slavery and then created, you know, the white supremacist code, which introduced racism onto this continent. Well, actually into the world from some of my studies. Well, I think, you know, we might say Europe might be the birthplace of racism. That's up for debate. But when I look at this man, Jeremy McDowell, be sitting in this wheelchair, basically on the sidewalk, on a public sidewalk, I never saw a gun. People said he had a gun, said he also might have been on PCP and taking some other drugs, self-medicating and what have you. I do remember reporting that he was on Social Security. The area looked impoverished to me. And so this man should not, let's just go ahead and say that. That's a part of surviving behind the enemy lines, is to be very careful, you know, about what you do. Because this can happen to you. It happens every day, not just to black people, but, you know, to people, period. That's what the numbers say. All right. So, he should not, I wouldn't advise doing drugs, sitting on a public street, allegedly with a gun, cause I never saw a gun. They claim to have, recovered a gun. Some unnamed witnesses claim he shot the gun in the air. I remember the early reports was, and I remember reporting was that a 911 caller said he shot himself. And we were reporting it like possible suicidal man, despondent man, you know, gunned down by cops. So it goes without saying, but, you know, we have to say these things, like I've said in before on broadcast. Don't speed. Don't do 15, 20 miles over the speed limit. If you know, especially in your county, you got a bunch of slave catchers out there looking to write a bunch of tickets so that they can fill the coffers of the city, like we saw in Ferguson. All right. Don't ride without a seatbelt. I mean, it's that simple. Put on a seatbelt. Don't give them probable cause to then pull you over. Ask you for permission to search your car. You thinking you can trust them? They go search your car and they find some drugs or something like that, or they plant some drugs, or somebody you was in your car had some drugs and throw them, you know, under the seat or something. Anyway, you know, if you had just put on your seatbelt, then you may or may not have, you know, have gotten stopped. They wouldn't have had probable cause over a seatbelt. So just common sense things. So with that said, though, there's still no excuse for the uncodified things that Jeremy McDowell did that put his life in harm's way. There's still no excuse for those slave catchers for taking his life in such a manner. Now, I was talking about comparing it to, you know, how I've seen videos of how white people with guns. Now, obviously, white men are getting shot down. I've seen some of those videos and what have you. But comparing this directly, you know, there was a white man in Michigan running around. I think he had either a rifle or a shotgun. I'm not sure. It looked like a rifle on video. He walking up and down, you know, a busy highway, not a highway, but, you know, a roadway, you know, busy road in a small town or what I look to be a suburban area. And police getting phone calls of a man outside terrorizing people with a gun, being belligerent. And obviously, it turned out later that he had been drinking and whatnot. So the police finally roll up on this man. They keep their distance from him, seeing he's armed and what have you. They were like 25 feet away from him. And then they attempted to talk this man down as if, you know, they were dealing with a suicidal individual or a homicidal individual. They kept their distance, took cover, and they attempted to communicate to him, ask him what was bothering him. And then one of the cops, you know, walked up to him, and without gun drawn or anything, and talk to the man, show all kind of empathy. You know, he probably reminded him of his grandfather, since both of them was white and what have you, and ended up getting the man to surrender himself without anybody losing their life that day. Now, when I play the audio of this video and you just listen, and keep in mind what I just described to you. If you saw that video of the man in Michigan, you know, engaged in the situation I just described. So here's the audio to Wilmington, Delaware police killing wheelchair-bound Jeremy McDull. Again, this happened in September of 2015. September 23rd, 2015 is the exact date. They executed him, in my opinion.
He's over here. Give me your hands. Show me your hands.
Oh, shit.
Show me your hands. Show me your hands. Drop the gun. Drop the gun. Drop the gun.
Grab it.
Hands up! Hands up!
Hands up!
Put your hands up!
Hands up!
Hands up!
Hands up!
Put your hands up!
Put your hands up, cuz. They shot his ass.
Hands, let me see your
hands. He's reaching again. Oh, he's bleeding. He's bleeding.
Hands up!
Just grab his hand. What the fuck?
So you just heard the audio of the execution of Jeremy McDull. I did link to the video so you could see it for yourself. I never see this man make any kind of furtive movements, as was hinted as the guy who was recording the cell phone video. He was saying that Jeremy had been shot. Well, right when the video starts, there's one officer on the scene. There's a car in between that officer and Jeremy McDull, who's on the sidewalk. The car's parked, you know, on the street. All right. So Jeremy McDull is in his wheelchair. Police had gotten calls about a man in a wheelchair with a gun. One report said he had shot himself. Another report had said, you know, he shot into the air. But when on this video, you never see a gun in his hand. Excuse me. Yes, you never see a gun in Mr. McDowell's hand. You do see him moving his hands around like he's checking himself after that first cop on the scene shot him with a shotgun. Looked like he shot him with some pellets or something. One of the witnesses said they saw blood. Oh, he's bleeding. And you can see him checking. And you can see something's wrong with the dude. He's not really totally all there. We getting reports that he might have been on some PCP and some other sort of drug and what have you. But again, never seen him make any kind of furtive movements. Didn't have a gun, but they claim that he reached for his waistband. I interpret that to be checking himself for gunshot wounds when they just, as you heard, just opened up on him and you know, his lifeless body slumps and falls on the ground like a rag doll because his legs don't work. I mean, just no empathy whatsoever, no attempt whatsoever to talk this man down. It was not like the scene I saw in Michigan with the white male inebriated with a gun, making furtive movements with the gun and what have you, pointing at people, speaking very angrily. Mr. McDull never uttered a word. But yet, those cops had enough empathy for that dude to see something was going on, possibly dealing with a mentally ill person, possibly drunk or whatnot. But we value his life. All life is precious. We're pro-lifers, and we don't want to gun him down out here in the street like a rabid dog. We are going to try to talk to him. You know, human being to human being, we're going to try to talk to him and see if we can bring this situation to a close non-violently. That is not what happened with Mr. McDowell. Yes, I know it's two different states and all this and that, but don't they all receive basically the same training, you know? They have law enforcement standards and what have you. I know I've been hearing some issues, you know, with that. But again, this is why I call for empathy tests, man, for jurors, for people who want to become cops. And, you know, on that subject, which would be a good segue for me into the next story, about, you know, some killings, similar killings here in North Carolina, in Harnett County. I don't think it's on this particular video, but I learned here in the state of North Carolina, all you need be is 21 and not a lawyer to be a sheriff deputy. So again, the standards are real low to get into law enforcement, whether we're talking about a beat cop, detectives, but it's very low entry into that, pretty much. If you can read and write, you probably can get a job, you know, as a cop, as a law enforcement officer. If you can read and write and you're at least 21 years old and don't have a law degree, you can become a sheriff here in North Carolina if the people so elect you. But this is just disgusting. It just adds to the trauma that black people suffer daily in this country. You know, even though it didn't happen to me personally, it's like a part of me was murdered right along with him. It is because I had the understanding that it could be me one day, or one of my relatives that are in places where they have a more increased likelihood than I would in having interactions with cops. Since I live in a rural area, I can go days. I mean, it's been a month, you know, without me seeing one single cop car, you know, and that includes me going to the grocery store, the little local grocery store, get whatever I need, local errands, post office, never see a cop car, you know what I'm saying? But my peeps in Detroit, my peeps, you know, in high density areas where people congregate in these urban areas, and you know, a lot of us, man, you know, the increase goes up, you know, the likelihood of you finding yourself in a similar situation goes up. So, you know, that's why I bring it to people's attention, because some people, you know, they act like these things aren't happening, or they act like it can't happen to them. Sure, you can build a concrete bunker, stock it with food and weapons and all that, and wait for the revolution to begin. But unless you living in the deep, deep woods, you don't get no mail, no nothing. You have no reason to interact with society. You know, you don't need to earn a living, in no kind of way that's outside of your house or anything like that. Then it could happen to you too. You know, nobody is safe. Nobody is safe. We are all behind enemy lines. So, the police have, the Wilmington police, that is, have concluded, their investigation. Let me make sure I bookmark this. Yeah, okay, here it is. It's on timesunion.com. I forgot to link to it in a program description. I will link to it. As I stated, the Wilmington police have finished their criminal and internal investigation into what they say, what the AP is calling a fatal police shooting of a black man in a wheelchair. Local officials said Tuesday, so that's today. This just came out today, this morning, actually. Days after city attorneys asked a federal judge to dismiss a lawsuit by the man's family. Authorities said Wilmington Police Department's criminal investigation into the September shooting of Jeremy McDowell has concluded. The results have been submitted to the Attorney General's office, which is conducting its own criminal investigation and will decide whether any of the four officers involved in the shooting will face criminal charges. The results of the police department's criminal probe was not disclosed. You can read the rest of this article. Again, it's timesunion.com. Just do a search on Jeremy McDowell. I'll link to it for those that come across the page later. when the podcast has been posted. So, you know, they've concluded their investigation. It didn't quite take them 1 year to do it, but they've concluded it. We don't know what the results, but let me just take a wild guess and say we've concluded. We've investigated this. We've investigated our officers, and we have concluded they did nothing wrong.
Right.
Not even any kind of recommendations for empathy, you know, training or you know, even taking classes on what do they call that? Conflict resolution. I mean, just nothing. Just come up on people like and issue commands like they're dogs, you know. Drop it, like you telling Spot to sit. No talking to him like a human. No attempt to contact the family. Didn't ask anybody what the man's name was, you know, so they could use his name and disarm him. That, you know, psychologically, Jeremy. And I mean, there was plenty of opportunity for them to actually run up on this dude, and just grab his arms. He can't kick you. He ain't gonna struggle too much. You know, cause they actually walked right in front of him, less than 10 feet away. About, I guess that's firing squad distance and whatnot. All three of them. The first one already shot him one time. As soon as he found him, he said, "I found him. He's over here." Blam! That quick. I think the car caught most of the pellets. I don't know if he was using a slug or a pellet, but Mr. McDowell, pellets, shotgun shell, some of them have pellets in it. So, or if Mr. McDowell got hit by flying debris from the car or something, but he was bleeding because the witness said, you know, he had been shot. Then the other two arrive on the scene, and about, what, maybe 7-8 seconds later, they formed a firing squad line. Again, just saying, you know, put your hands up, what have you. In no time, again, did I ever see a gun in his hand. That's not to say one wasn't sitting in his lap or hidden in his jacket or something like that, but I saw plenty of opportunity to run up on this clearly discombobulated individual and easily disarm him. Perhaps just using your words and empathy, you could have resolved that. But I mean, they just, some of these people, man, they are, I think, you know, I've heard people refer to them as serial killers, man, just dreaming and waiting for the opportunity to, you know, participate in something just barbaric like this. Again, you know, this does happen to more than just black people. I've seen it on video and what happened, but it happens a lot more often, you know, disproportionate to our population number. But again, as Mr. Barber in the next story that I'm going to highlight coming out of North Carolina, as we listen to the North Carolina NAACP press conference in Harnett County about police violence, murder, and corruption, you know, nobody should be disqualified that is a victim of slavery or a victim of the slave catchers based on their skin color. A victim is a victim of this. So, you know, and it's going to take all hands on deck. We need plenty of bodies to do something to overthrow, you know, this system of slavery. Again, I felt like if black people could do it, it already been done. If we could do it on our own, you know, we really don't have the resources and what have you. And for what, there are many reasons that I don't care to go into now, but, you know, I just want it to end by any means necessary. I don't care who stops it. Just want it to end. All right. So before I move into this next story, listen to this press conference. Before I move on to that, here's some of what the family was saying, though, what that I felt was kind of uncodified. They were just using the R word. The R word is the racism word. Let me see if I can find that. The lawsuit by McDowell's family claims, among other things, that he was the victim of intentional racial discrimination and that the officers would not have shot a white person in such a situation. The city court's filing rejected any claim of racial discrimination. Attorney for the city said in their court filings that McDowell was given repeated commands to drop his gun and raise his hands. But see, Mr. Dole never had a gun to drop in his hands. Then, you know, as their autopsy is claiming he had marijuana and PCP, somebody then gave him a joint laced with something, probably thought it was funny. I don't know. Maybe he used PCP, but he wasn't in his right mind. And I believe they were told that, but they didn't even try to ascertain the situation before resorting to violence. Now, the reason I say that they're being uncodified is, how do you prove intentional racism in this particular case? I don't think that you can. What you could argue is that he was shot down like a rabid dog and say his constitutional rights were violated. Now, I don't know what the gun laws are in Wilmington, Delaware. I don't know what the regulations are and what have you, but it's everybody's constitutional right to own a firearm, especially if you're an adult. So him being armed or allegedly being armed does not give police and slave catchers a right to just gun you down because they suspect you got a gun. I never saw a gun. I watched the video. I know people said he shot in the air or shot himself. So yes, it's logical for the officers to assume he does have a gun, but again, they never actually saw a gun. If they saw everything that I saw. Now, to prove intentional racial discrimination, you would have to come up with a case from this police department where they interacted with a white person in a similar situation and they talked them down, or they called out, you know, whoever the person they call out, you know, how they, maybe that's just in the movies or something. They don't really call anybody out to talk anybody down from the ledge or anything. So that's what you would have to prove. So, and I've heard Mr. Fuller, and that is one of the things that I agree with him on, is when we file court filings and stuff, we want to use the language that they use. And we know that as soon as we say racism, oh, automatically the burden to prove that is high as hell. They purposely made that so. So that's not being codified. If you could hint at that by saying his civil rights were violated. You could even say constitutional rights. Well, you know, every American has constitutional right to bear arms, and Mr. McDowell did not point his weapon at anyone. There's no reports of him pointing or threatening anyone with a gun. The only report that you got is that he possibly might have harmed himself. You don't know if Mr. McDowell had a felony or any kind of thing that prohibited him from owning a gun, you know, just like they didn't know that white man with the rifle. They don't know if he was a felon or not and was prohibited from, you know, owning a firearm, but what have you. So, you know, sometimes we don't need to raise the bar on ourselves. And I do think it's logical what Mr. Fuller suggested, that if you don't have direct evidence that can prove racism beyond a doubt, that you shouldn't use that word and you should be codified with your word usage and say something like my constitutional rights were violated. Go read the Constitution. Go read all the laws and say that. But don't say, you know, the R word. Why even go there? Because immediately you have raised the bar and they will dismiss it just based on that. It's not all about all the time being correct and calling things what they are when we're seeking to attain something through the system. No, you be codified and you use the language that they use. And so that's the only reason why I wanted to point out that I thought what was being relayed by the media on behalf of the family was, you know, and it's probably attorneys and what have you, who probably put that in there first. I don't know. But I think it just raises the bar too high to prove intentional racial discrimination. How about something like, you know, intentional disregard for Mr. McDowell's life, liberty, and his right to own a firearm? Again, I didn't see him threatening anyone. There are no reports that, you know, Mr. McDowell pointed a weapon at anyone, which would be assault with a deadly weapon in some states. No calls like that. All the calls, the only call that mentioned a weapon said he either shot it into the air or he had shot himself. So, now, when I come back on the other side of this break, just contrast this with the language that Mr. Reverend Barber is using, and just how codified it seems. And also, I'm peeping the game of racially showcasing white victims of the same system and what have you. See, that psychology works both ways. It really does. And so, you know, somebody told me years ago, you can't racially showcase white people. Well, you know, y'all just don't know me, and I don't even care to comment on some of the things that I have done as a youngster and coming up. And, you know, they are not superhumans. They are not immune to everything. They are susceptible to the same thing we are susceptible to. Before I go to a break, and then launch into the next story about the NAACP calling for a Ferguson-like investigation after three people were killed in Harnett County by the Sheriff's Department, which is being described as practicing racism and classism against the citizens of that county. Let me go to the phone lines. We do have a caller. I don't know how long you've been hanging on. Area code 754, you are on air right now. Go ahead with your question or comment. Area code 754. Your line is unmuted. Go ahead. All right. So perhaps they changed their mind. I'm going to go ahead and clear the call.
Q&A queue is cleared.
If you do want to come in again, hit *6-1. Now check in on you. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, broadcasting on Black Talk Radio Network's digital radio station, providing you with new black media for the new millennium. We'll be back on the other side.
Great. Here. No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Give up on my way.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in for this broadcast. Again, if you have a question or comment, don't hesitate to ask. Agreement isn't necessary. That's how we learn, is by considering differing viewpoints. That's part of the process of learning. So please don't hesitate to share anything you would like to share. 641-715-3660 is the conference line. The participant code is 549032, pound, hit *6-1 if you'd like to comment on air. The studio line is 704-951-5030. As I shared that clip of Nee Fuller talking about racial showcasing, there is, you have to watch the video, which I did link to. Obviously, if you're listening, you know, in your car right now, through your smartphones or tablets or what have you, you can't see it. But if you get an opportunity, go check it out later so that you can see how the NAACP is kind of showcasing these two white families who are members of one of their family members were victims of police killings and brutality, saying they were preyed upon because they're poor or what have you. There was one black family there representing the young black man who was, well, he was in his 29s, about 29 years old, I think. So, young black man, obviously, he's already shackled and handcuffed in the jail cell, and sheriff deputies herd him into a cell where then, and the woman says it, you'll hear it on the press conference, that the black deputy shot him right in the chest with a taser, causing this man to have a heart attack. And I've long reported the dangers of tasers. Those things ain't safe. And I learned from listening to this press conference, Mr. Barber say the people who make that taser said that you aren't not supposed to, well, not supposed, let me rephrase that. He said that they tell you that if you shoot somebody in the chest with that taser, obviously that's where their heart is, and you gonna introduce, you know, up to 50,000 or more volts into that, there's a risk of heart attack. They're admitting that now. So, you know, this black deputy didn't have no problem executing or electrocuting this black male who was already shackled and handcuffed, wasn't a threat to anyone. He might have said something they didn't like or what. I don't know what caused it. But, I you know, watch that, man. And then also pay attention to the words that Mr. Barber is using. And also, I think I reported on this about last week. Reverend Barber is also a recent victim of racism by an airline company that put him off a plane because he offered to pray for this racist suspected white man who was berating him on an airline flight. Mr. Barber is a rather large man. He also has a spinal issue that he's had diagnosed since he was a teenager. He walks with a cane and what have you. So on this airline flight, he purchased two seats. And then the person sitting behind him, you know, possibly don't like large people, you know, just berating Mr. Barber, being insulting, verbally attacking the man and what have you. And Mr. Barber kind of got upset or, you know, finally had enough and stood up and offered to pray for the man. No, he didn't cuss him out or punch him in the mouth and what have you and ask him what his problem was. No, he offered to pray for the man. And so what happened then is they put Mr. Barber off the plane. Yeah, that's how they handle that. Not the belligerent, insulting, combative, terroristic passenger who was attacking Mr. Barber, sitting directly behind Mr. Barber. Nobody, you know, told that man to stop. And when he gets up to offer to pray for the man, you put him on. So that just happened to Reverend Barber. And he has been under attack for a long time by racist Republicans here in this state. Not to say, you know, we don't have any racist Democrats or anything like that, but these Republicans, man, the things they do, they straight up racist. I've been living here pretty much most of my adult life, except for 6 years when I was in the military. So they've been attacking him in the media here lately. So this is Reverend Barber yesterday. Again, he is the state chapter leader for North Carolina for the NAACP. He's in Harnett County. The first person you will hear speak is the chapter president of Harnett County. I forget the lady's name. But this is a press conference that they had yesterday that lasted well over 30 minutes, but I'm only going to share about 24 minutes of that with you. So if you have any questions, comments, anything you want to share on what you hear, or if you've seen the video, please say those for when we come back. All right, this is the press conference that went down yesterday in Harnett County, North Carolina, concerning the corrupt police or sheriff's department, which has been accused of racism and classism. The NAACP has filed an official complaint on behalf of the citizens of that county and the state, as well as the family members of the victims, and asked for the Justice Department to come in and do a Ferguson-like investigation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First, we would like to thank the media for coming today, and we're just about getting ready to start. The Harney County NAACP, State NAACP, joined forces with the local attorney, Jesse Johns. Jesse has brought 12 disturbing cases to our attention in the local NAACP to uncover the corruption of the Harney County Sheriff's Department and the judicial system of the murder cases that Mandy Locke has been investigating. Now, this time, I'm going to turn this over to our state president, Dr. Reverend William Barber. Let's make him feel a welcome. And what do we want?
Justice!
And when we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Justice!
What do we want?
Now!
First of all, before I do anything, I want to thank family. Greg family. I'm deliberately, members of the media, just taking a little time. I've been dealing with and thinking through these matters with Ms. Carolyn McDougal, who's not only a local president, but state vice president. And I'm here with Jimmy Buxton, who is the district director for this area, also the president of the Fayetteville branch of the NAACP, and also Al McShirley, who is our statewide, one of our statewide attorneys, and some years ago was awarded the top NAACP civil rights lawyer in the country. And we're here most of all today with the Griggs, the Fay, and Livingston family. And I want the media right off the bat to understand the NAACP is not a black organization.
That's right. Amen.
Or a white organization, we are a civil rights organization.
Yes, sir.
A civil rights organization. And for more than 100 years, we have addressed the issue of judicial and police malpractice. And so we stand with the Livingston family, we stand with the Griggs family, and we stand with the Bethay family, and we stand with others that may have been impacted by what's going on here. Today, we are announcing that we have already forwarded to Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Attention, Ms. Vanita Gupta, head of the Civil Rights Division. This, the North Carolina NAACP and the Harnett County NAACP branch versus the Harnett County Sheriff's Department. And I want to read this. These are very serious matters. It's no laughing matter. In fact, in some ways, they're tearful matters.
Yes.
So we're not talking about somebody just being pulled over for a traffic ticket. We're talking about life, and we're talking about death. Dear Attorney General Loretta Lynch and Deputy Attorney General Vanita Gupta, this written complaint, based on the recent referenced News and Observer four-part series by reporter Mandy Locke, comes to you with a request for a comprehensive Ferguson-like investigation of the Harnett County Sheriff Department that was featured in the series of the News and Observer. Now, the reason we put that in there for all the reporters is the law actually says Civil Rights Act of 1964 actually says that you can call for an investigation based on news media reports of discrimination and violation of federal law. We request that the Locke series be referred to Title VI and the criminal sections of the Civil Rights Division. And we have enclosed those articles. Mrs. Locke analyzed a dozen disturbing cases that occurred over the past few years. This means the problem is systemic. Some victims of misconduct under the color of law are black. Some are white. Some are Native American. And some are Latino. But all were from poor families. The NAACP believes the deeply entrenched system of racism and classism that historically prevailed in Harnett and similarly rural North Carolina counties, particularly after they suffered great economic upheaval in 2008 recession and were stripped of adequate federal representation by the race-based redistricting schemes found to be unconstitutional but not yet remedied by a three-judge U.S. District Court, needs an all-sided investigation and effective structural remedies by your department, just as you did in Ferguson.
Yes.
Now, I've been to Ferguson, and we share this with you. And I saw firsthand when I went to Ferguson and worked with communities there how a corrupt municipal and county system, which was first brought to the nation's attention after the tragic shooting of a young black man, turned out to be part of a larger system of corrupt injustice that had created a river of distrust in the jurisdiction as wide as the nearby Mississippi River. And the river of distrust in this county is as wide as the Cape Fear River.
Yes.
Fear and distrust between the diverse residents of Harnett and its powerful law enforcement agency, the Sheriff's Office, is wide and deep. And you can see that by the diversity here. Black, white, Latino, Native American, all poor. And let me say this away from the letter, and then I'm going to go back to it. A gun and a badge, investigatory powers, the ability to serve warrants and take family members out of their homes, and the ability to be protected by the DA is too much power for a racist, a bigot, and somebody that looks down on people because they're poor. The dozen cases Ms. Locke describes in deadly force were greatly disturbing to all of us. But the NAACP, like Ms. Locke, is more troubled, and we trust you will be, by the haunting question Ms. Locke and her editors ask in their subline: a warrantless entry, an innocent man shot dead. A squad of deputies who spread fear south of the Cape Fear River. A homicide in jail caught on tape, yet somehow kept under wraps. Here is the question that must be investigated, and we're calling on the Attorney General to do it. Who polices the Sheriff's Office? We herewith ask this same haunting question and call on your experts to come in and do a Ferguson-like investigation. the NAACP and our Harnett branch and a handful of courageous lawyers who have helped Ms. Locks and have taken some of the cases for budget rates are up against a deeply entrenched structure. This is not just an incident here, an incident there. This is a deeply entrenched structure that has shown little respect for the constitutional right of poor and working families in Harnett County.
Amen.
Now, families of color probably get the worst of it, but poor white families are clearly targeted also by the squad of deputies, which Ms. Locke identifies in detail. It does not help to blame white people for racist law enforcement. It's not white people. It's this racist law enforcement. When it is corrupt systems and the turning of heads by people who are supposed to enforce the Constitution that are the root causes. Who has been turning their head in Harnett County? Who has known about this? Who has had the power to challenge it? Who is policing the sheriff? That's the question, as Ms. Locke has asked over and over again. Punishment is summarily meted out in people's homes. That's not the American way. You're always innocent until proven guilty. Punishment is meted out in the jail. Punishment is meted out sometime in the court where no qualified lawyers are willing to challenge the culture of corruptness that seems to be in control. The death of the emotionally disturbed black man in a cell after a deputy and his peers appears to have herded the young man into the cell with the aim of tasering him is particularly troubling. It was not until recently that Taser International, the manufacturer of the high profitable weapon, admitted that shots to the chest, as shown in the video, are often lethal. I want to note finally with thanks that a federal prosecutor and Department of Justice investigators are looking into two of the three cases Ms. Locke highlighted. The NAACP is always pleased when the family of a victim injured or killed by an out-of-control officer or group of officers gets some resolution. But the NAACP has had one driving purpose since we were founded 107 years ago, to eliminate racial discrimination and to dismantle racism and discrimination of any form. Dealing with police brutality cases one at a time will bankrupt the county. Trying to deal with it one at a time will increase distrust. Dealing with them one at a time will merely put band-aids on cancer. What caused the jurisdiction's autoimmune system to fail? Probably causing the cancer of corruptness in the first place. These are the questions we must ask. We're dealing with a systemic problem here. How can we revitalize the autoimmune system that apparently broke down? There is a problem here. And we need the Justice Department to come in and not investigate one case at a time, but the entire system. We need a comprehensive diagnosis. For example, does North Carolina's three qualifications for the most powerful position in most rural counties, and mind for that media, the sheriff in these rural counties particularly, and the DAs are the most powerful people in a county.
Yes,
they're the only people that can issue one piece of paper and send a sheriff and send out their deputies or him or herself and come to your door and take your family members out without a struggle. The question is, is the way in which we say sheriffs are qualified, for instance, have anything to do with the structural problems of an office? You know, to be a sheriff with all this power, all this power that can affect the family like the Bethay family and the Livingston family and the Griggs family. All you have to do is be 21 years old and live in the county for a year before the election and not be a lawyer. That's all. They're 21 years old, live in the county for a year before the election and not be a lawyer. That's North Carolina General Statute 162-2. That's all. That's all. And with that, you have all this power. Gun power. Warrant serving power. Arresting power. Taser power. Investigating power. Covering up power.
Say that again.
We need federal help in Harnett County. And so please let us know how we can help with your investigation. And we want you to know that we CC'd Attorney Jesse Jones, who's been on the front lines as an attorney. And we celebrate him. We wrap our arms around him. We will protect him. We need a call in because he can't do it alone.
That's right.
We do need and help. One case at a time.
Yes. It's urgent.
Wait a minute. It's not enough. It's just an extra speaker because I think I'm the speaker. I don't know. All right. So you have to have, I don't mean no harm, but we have to hold this. We're going to do this in order. Now, because this is one purpose here this morning. We are calling in for a full, and I want to say this again, Ferguson-like investigation. Now, you know in Ferguson, they ended up covering up the real issue of Michael Brown death because it never went to trial. So we don't know, really know what happened. It went to, but the Department of Justice came in, and when they came in and issued their report, they clearly stated that Ferguson had a systemic problem of racism, classism, and discrimination. And that's what we have here in this county. Now, let me take any questions that we may have at this time. Al, would you come? I want at least one family member to come right here beside me of each family. I need one mother, aunt, live right here. Because I want the picture to be clear. And say who you're representing.
My name is Dolly Gregg, and I represent Christian Gregg.
Christian Gregg.
Yeah.
All right. Tell him how old he was.
He was 23 years old. He was murdered by his father-in-law. Shot 6 times, 4 times in the back while he was lying face down. And nothing happened to Pat Chisholm for murdering my son.
And he was a veteran.
He was a veteran. And then the sheriff's department collaborated with the family to cover up the murder. By going to this
extreme
of changing the privacy from what the original privacy was.
Okay.
My name is
Makeba
Corbin.
Speak in the mic.
Come
can't hear you.
My name we'll is.
We'll
take care. We got it.
My name is Makeba Corbin. I'm representing Brandon Bethay. My cousin was tased in a cell by a black officer. He left from there for 25 minutes.
That's all right.
He was left there 25 minutes without any CPR or anything. He had no handcuffs in his hands. He had shackles on his feet. Like I said, they tased him dead in the chest.
And because I want people to understand, in the NAACP, it doesn't matter if you're black or you're white. We stand against police brutality. We stand against systemic injustice. It doesn't matter. If we believe and a family comes to us and it's been an issue and they've asked for us to get involved, we don't just come get involved. Whenever you see us here, the family has made a request.
Yes, that's right.
It's not, we don't chase ambulances.
That's right.
We don't do that. And so I want that to be clear, and then I want Mr. Who's representing Livingston. Come here right here.
Hello, I'm Carmen Saylor. I'm representing John Livingston. John Livingston was my brother-in-law. He was 33 years old. Officer Cahagas had the wrong man, the wrong house, wrong everything, and Harding County hasn't done anything.
So what connects all of these families is what we believe is a systemic problem of sheriff, police, and judicial malpractice and being out of control. And while they have case by case, we need this federal, full Ferguson-like investigation of Harding County. Let me say to all of you, one more time around here, that is why it is important. You know, when you critique a problem, and I say to this the citizens of Harding County, that's why we don't say white people did it. There's racism here. There's classism here.
Yes.
There's political, there's police and judicial and law enforcement corruption here. And there comes a time that we join together. And I say this especially to the media because sometimes we forget that. The civil rights movement was fought by black and white people.
Yes, sir.
And Latino people.
Yes, sir.
Huh? Yeah. There were some black people in the civil rights movement that weren't for Dr. King. They didn't stand. And there were some white people that were.
Yeah.
What connects them, these families, is the pain and the tears that has been caused by the systemic problems and what we believe is a deep-seated corruption here in this county that has to have this full federal investigation. Let me take your question.
Do you have any message specifically for the Latino community who might be hesitant to come forward?
We have right here, I'm glad you asked that, this young lady right here is North Carolina NAACP is one, if not the only state conference that has a Latino liaison representative on our state executive committee. She is the vice president of the Harding County branch of the NAACP. She works in tandem with Ms. McDougal. And we need to come forward. That's one of the reasons why we want a full federal investigation, because when the feds come in, they will hold hearings, they will go into every community, they will give people the courage to come forward and to share the things that they have experienced. Because when you remember, whenever you have corruptness in your sheriff's department or police departments or DA's office, it creates a level of fear.
Right.
Creates a level of fear by people who are impacted, by people who are victims, and sometimes by people who are in the system who know better, but they're too afraid on their own to come forward. The federal coming in allows space and room for that to happen. And so we say to our brothers and sisters in the Latino community, anybody, to come forward. Police, brutality, questions about murders and arrests and killings at the hand of police is just wrong. We are not anti-police because you need police. But what we are is anti-police abuse, police brutality. And when you have a squad, somebody knew they were operating. Somebody's known they were operating. And the only way you can have trust is you must have transparency. And the only way you can have trust is you must make sure that the bad apples are not able to use the system as a cover-up for injustice and violence. You have, how many veterans we have out here? I want you to raise your hands. All these veterans. These veterans didn't go fight in other countries. To then come back here and see a police system or sheriff's department operate in a way that's unconstitutional. So let's get it clear. We're not against, sometimes people say, well, you're against police. No, you're not against police when you speak out against rogue police and corrupt system. You're actually for police because you want the police and the sheriff's departments to work right and not work wrong. So that, accountability. And again, we're talking about life and death here. Any other questions?
All right, we're going to stop it there. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in for this broadcast. Again, if you have any questions or comments before we wrap up the show, hit *6 and 1. I do see 754 on the board. Go ahead with your question or comment, 754. 754-9039.
Hey, how you doing, Scotty?
I'm doing the best I can, bro. What's up with you?
I'm just hanging in now. Oh my gosh, he is, to, in my eyes, just saying, that type of black person is the epitome of why things are, the racism, white supremacy is constantly going on. He's one of the cogs in it.
Can you explain that? That's interesting. Can you explain why you say Reverend Barber is the cause of racism, white supremacy? Explain that.
I feel that way because mainly he's included. In my eyes, he's including, a classism issue. He's including, But just to speak on the class, okay, it is a difference. It's a 1% and 99%. We know that a lot of our people are in that 99%. Most of our people are in that 99%, but not all of them. We know that. But the source, in my eyes, that class divide was to keep us downward because all white people weren't included as being in the white race at first. But from what I understand, they were included into the white race for nothing else, to suppress us, to keep us down, to bolster their numbers and with everything else that go along with it. So class, yeah, it is a problem and it is a divide. But if you don't start at the root of it, which in my eyes is racism. Racism is the reason these people don't care for. Even if it was a black man killing another black man, in my eyes, he's been corrupt by a corrupt racist system. And so he sees his class divide has elevated him into feeling he has a grasp into the white privilege. He has a grasp into the supremacy because he's in a part of the system. He's been included into that fraternal order of police. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that to me. That has nothing to do with concentrating on the issue of white people not liking or hating non-white people is the basis of it. And I understand we have to be codified in our comments. We have to be codified we have to be codified in everything, understanding everything, but. To talk around the issues, like yesterday, you had the clip where you played with the non-white woman and the white woman. They were talking back and forth about why she a Hillary supporter and why the other one was a Bernie supporter and why she wouldn't support Hillary Clinton. And though her comments were very codified, she stayed on the topic of. These things come from racism. These things are systematic, and he just included too much with other things. So
okay,
I felt that.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, let me just give you some feedback. I disagree with you, but that's okay. I ask people to call in and share, even if they have a differing opinion. Because that's how we learn. I got a different take on that. He quite often mentioned systemic racism. He mentioned institutional racism. But he also added classism. Now, if you haven't seen the video, he said that they don't go chasing families like ambulance chasers. These families have called them. So apparently white families called the NAACP to address the situation in that county where the man that they described, the police, the deputy going to the wrong house, had the wrong address, had the wrong man, and shot and killed this white man. So that, for whatever reason, that white family contacted the NAACP to help them address this issue of police terrorism in that county. Now, as he correctly stated, NAACP ain't a black organization. We know it was founded by white people. All right. Now, pretty much the leadership now is black people and what have you. But it has always been organizations where people of all different racial classifications have worked together to address these systemic issues. So I didn't feel like he was shifting the focus. I felt like he was including poor whites as being victims of the very same system. You know, it was white people were up there speaking. One of the victims, what was it, his sister-in-law, spoke up for him. So to me, that's being codified. That's being strategic. That the media purposely hides the amount of white death at the hands of slave catchers so that white people don't fight against that very system. Long as they think their privilege is intact. And you're correct. All white people are not white supremacists. All right. They weren't. And this is where, let me bring this up. I see the root problem is slavery. Not racism. Slavery came first. Then came racism when they started passing the white supremacist codes, slave codes. That is the first time that the system started discriminating against people based on their skin color. So slavery came first. Racism came second so that they could then just target black people for slavery and no longer target the formerly non-whites that now they're calling them whites, you know. So I see slavery and since we're talking about law enforcement, we're talking about the county jail, you know, one of the slave holding pens. I felt like his language was right on point and being codified. And one last thing, and I'll let you respond. This also goes back to the use of language. You heard him citing laws. He was citing codes. He was citing the rules and what he talked about, the Constitution. He used the code word American. You know, to me, he was very, very codified and strategic with the use of his language. But, you know, but everybody may not get the same perspective, and that's okay.
It's about learning. That's why I like when you say, it's okay for us to disagree, because out of that disagreement, we're going to get a better understanding of what it is we're against, which is white supremacy. You're right. All of them are white supremacists. And hearing you break it down, replaying what he said, because I listened to it. Some of it got kind of low on me, but I listened to it, and it sounded like he was including, but you're right. That is codification. That is in the definition of codification. And I don't know, he sounded like a reverend with him. You know, he sounded like
he
a pastor that I would hear every say. Yeah, he is. But I'm saying this is exactly how, as soon as I heard him speak, I just felt like I was in church, and I felt like I tuned him out, and I didn't give him a full chance. I was antagonizing his words as they were coming, as I was hearing them. So I didn't give him a full chance, you know, to really grasp how he was saying, because I understood what he was saying. He was on point, just the way that he was saying it.
Yeah, go check out the video. Check out the video if you have a chance. And I like what he's doing. Like, even at the end there, they were saying that, you know, the lady asked the question in the crowd. He didn't ask the question, but the lady, he said, anybody got any questions? She said, well, what about Latinos who may be afraid to come forward, who are being targeted, you know, by these same slave catchers? And what was he going to say? No, we only focus on black people. You know what I'm saying?
On black issues. He couldn't do that. That's right. That had to be included. You're right, and that's codification, because it does help the cause. It definitely helps the cause, because we all against the same thing.
Right. Even if we don't culturally, you know, have differences with these people and whatnot, when issues intersect that affect all of us, it's all hands on deck, in my opinion, because like he mentioned, back in the day, everybody wasn't on board with Dr. King fighting against, you know, racism, discrimination, you know, treating us with indignity. Some black folks was against him. And the same thing is today. Some of these black folks, man, especially of the black bourgeoisie, so-called educated with their degrees and stuff, they don't care about poor people. They don't care about poor black people, period. So you have to, when you're dealing with it on a local level like that in your county, you got to find your allies where you can find them and get them to focus on the system instead of focusing on you.
I agree with that. I agree with that sentiment. Because it is fighting against the system. You need every ally you can possibly gather in. This is true. I also want, without taking too much time, I also want to comment on what you were saying about, you just mentioned it briefly, but these predatory police officers being, somebody mentioned that them being serial killers.
Yeah.
And I thought about, I forget her name, but you play her a lot, and she's speaking on, I was listening to her this morning too on the way to work, and she speaks about the appetite from slavery, appetite of rape and disfigurement and you know, experimenting on and all that. It never went away. You know what I mean? And I thought about how she was just transferring into positions of power, positions of authority, such as police officers and things like that. And they still have the predatory ways, in my eyes, that they've even passed them down generation to generation to generation.
Yeah.
And I used to be a real big movie buff, but not as much, not so much anymore. But movies like, I think it's Hostel, I think it's pronounced Hostel or Hostel, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and movies like that, I really sit and study them, you know, back them up and all that other kind of stuff, little research on them. And I see how devious their culture is, how, you know, like demonic there, the stuff that they do. And I'm just thinking of that in terms of this person, you know, he was doing all these devious things, and he was never made to stop. He just, you know, he was told, hey, bad, you can't do that anymore. He was just told you can't do it. Nobody made him stop. Mm-hmm. And he kept doing these things and introduced them into his offspring, his sons and things like that, or daughters perhaps.
Yeah, it is just a culture.
How that perpetuates over time and that appetite grew. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, and you'll hear often some cops will tell you, well, my dad was a cop, or somebody in my family was a cop, and I'm like third generation slave catcher or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is, man. It's an institutional thing and generational thing. It's like belonging to a clique or a club. But one interesting point, and then I have to move on because we got Tando Radio Show coming up at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Think about this for those who oppose coalition building, who might be opposed to the NAACP in North Carolina assisting black, white, Latino. He even mentioned Native Americans who have been victims of the sheriff's department in this particular county. Now, as demonstrated by the black sheriff deputy executing or electrocuting the black young man in a cell where he talked about them hurting him and then shooting him in the chest with the taser. Look, hey, they don't mind. The slave catchers don't care what your color is as long as you down with the mission. Do they? As long as you down with the mission.
You're right about that, Scotty.
Yeah. That's the equivalent of a black person.
Any color in the world, they don't care. Only thing they care about is you broken the law, a law of one of the corporations, you broken the law, you're a lawbreaker. You're a slave. You've been caught. So all bets is off.
Yeah, but they don't, you know, like this black cop, something wrong with him that he felt comfortable with doing this. You know, and he didn't have any empathy for that young black man whatsoever. And it's the culture. That's where we're talking about systemic. Nobody want to know what people know what's right, but they scared to do right. And even will do wrong to prove their allegiance to the system so they can get all the perks and everything that goes along with being a slave catcher in a modern day slave system.
I agree, Scott. I definitely agree. I thank you, though, man. I know you got to get off, you know, for Tando. I'll be listening to that, too. But I appreciate the commentary. I appreciate the news. And I hope to talk to you again real soon.
All right. All right. Thank you. All right. Yeah.
Q&A queue is cleared.
Yeah, that's the only way that we can learn and enlighten each other is if you got a different opinion. I mean, you might make me see it from a different angle. I might make you see it from a different angle. We both learn and grow from it. That's what it's all about. You know, only place where agreement is 100% necessary is in a totalitarian regime, and we're certainly not that. We're family here. All right. Just some quick notes I want to share that I was taking, some things that I felt were important to know. He said that the Civil Rights Law, 1964 Civil Rights Act, says that media reports can trigger an investigation. So that just again solidifies in my mind what Malcolm X talked about and what got me to go further into the field of media. Once I saw that video where he talked about media is the most powerful entity on face of the planet because it controls the minds of the masses. Now, it's through this media, this one reporter who they kept mentioning, who did a 4-part series investigative report. I'm aware of the News and Observer that doesn't really cover this area where I live in, but it is a North Carolina-based paper, and they are online, so I read it from time to time. So she did an investigative report using the tools of the Freedom of Information Act request and, you know, going in and looking at these public records, piecing together a bigger, you know, putting the puzzle pieces together to paint this picture of out of control corruption, violence, murder, slave catching, just all part of slavery. Of course, so, you know, I did not know that's all you needed was investigative reports in the media like this in order to file a complaint and trigger. So that means that you could cite, let's say, for example, on this program, New Abolitionist Radio, where we often have said, you know, we got 5 years of archives where we have documented that America is Ferguson. You know, Reverend Barber asking for a Ferguson-like investigation, talking about the systemic corruption at the count, you know, all throughout that county. All right. Max and Johannin came out with the series Ferguson is America, where we were researching, collecting stories just for one particular county in America or city. I mean, these guys were really doing a lot of research and putting a puzzle together, just like the Ferguson report. And then they came out with the series America is Ferguson. Harnett, North Carolina is Ferguson. So I didn't know that. And so, again, this is important. Why it's important that black people, particularly since we have lost so much media, whether that's black newspaper, black radio, we never really own any television stations. We might have had some local shows on a television station, but black magazines and all that. Right now, 6 corporations in the United States, and I imagine some of them are multinational corporations, like Fox, but they control 95% of what we watch, what we see on TV, what we read, all the newspapers, all the new so-called news reports and what have you. And so, you know, we need our own localized as well as national and international media. We need to rebuild what we lost, and that is the mission of the Black Talk Media Project. When I created it in 2008 as a North Carolina-based nonprofit, after being inspired by Malcolm X talking about the power of the media. So I thought that was important, you know. And I imagine, you know, all we have to do, a blogger could do that. It's still the media, a blogger. So I don't want to go off into a tangent again. We got a Tando Radio Show coming up, because it would take me, you know, about an hour to just lay out my total vision for the things we want to do through the Black Talk Media Project. Let me see, what else did I write? America is Ferguson, when he mentioned a Ferguson-like thing. White privilege. White privilege was brought up. See, I live in one of those rural 85%, 86% white counties here in North Carolina. All right. Where we're surrounded by white people, poor white people, not wealthy white people. We're talking about people surviving with the collapse of the textile industry on EBT cards and hunting and fishing and whatever else help they can get with the loss with the mass unemployment that's around here. I don't care what they say the unemployment rate is. People drop off of those roles. They exhaust their unemployment benefits, and then they're thrown off the roles. That does not mean they found a job. So I live in one of those counties. Fortunately, I live in a county where I do not hear reports about this police brutality and what have you. And there have been situations where they have taken in people alive who were shooting at each other in the Walmart parking lot, and they took them in alive, didn't shoot either one of them. I don't hear about the things going on in that jail, which I've been in more times than I care to remember. You know, spending my whole entire life here and being, you know, just a rebellious type person. But anyway, yeah, I've been in that jail, nothing serious and what have you. And I just don't hear these sort of things going on. But in terms of, it's hard for me to see these people's white privilege when my family, you know, most of us, not all of us, but a core of us live on the same road within 5 miles of each other. Pretty, you know, decent sized community. If we lived in a city, would take up several city blocks and what have you. And we're living a whole lot better, you know, than many of these poor white people living in these trailer parks and, you know, on crystal meth, selling drugs, because there's no jobs and what have you. So it's hard for me to say that I see these people's privilege. Now, you know, obviously a situation might come up where I might apply for a job and they apply for a job and then they get the job even though I got to hire. Yeah, those sort of things. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm keeping it focused on slave patrolling and slave catching and whatnot. And, you know, these white boys here and women are filling up the jail in Gaston County. So, you know, that might be another reason, since that jail stay full of white folks, that I don't hear too much about any kind of, you know, brutality against the prisoners and what have you. Hell, there's a report today, I shared it, a guy tried to commit suicide in the Gaston County jail, jumping from the second floor, because they got two tiers in the jail, the first floor and the second floor, and it's all an open bay. And then on the second floor, you know, there's just railing, but you can look down into the open bay. This dude jumped over the railing onto his head, onto the concrete floor below to kill himself. Do you know they let this fool out of jail? They let this fool out of jail. Makes you wonder why he was in jail in the first place, which they are not disclosing. He's in the hospital right now. The district attorney went and got him an unsecured bond so they wouldn't have to post a sheriff deputy outside of his hospital door. So he must not been in there in the jail for anything serious. Probably a panhandler, homeless person or whatnot, a mentally ill person, and try to kill himself. So they let him go, man. I was like, I ain't never heard of nothing like this. I harmed myself, so you gonna let me out. You know, regardless of what I've done, you don't hear too many stories like that. But I'm just saying, you know, I don't see a lot of these people's so-called white privilege in terms of how they living, in terms of how my family is living. Are we living on a large on the hog or anything? No, 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 no. But we got resources. We look out for one another. You know what I'm saying? Whereas, you know, these white people, man, some of these white people, especially, you know, on Section 8 housing, living in a trailer on EBT, it's hard for me to look at them people and say, yeah, white privilege. No, no. And so when you also live in a camp, when you live where it is predominantly white people, where everybody can't be white supremacists, so the whites, you know, on the bottom of the totem pole, you know, somebody got to get mistreated, somebody got to get enslaved, and so, you know, it happens to them, and there's just no denying it. It's just no denying it, and nobody should. Again, I am not an abolitionist because I'm against the enslavement of black people. I'm an abolitionist because I'm against slavery, period. All right. Now, we do point out the racism and whatnot. But again, racism is a symptom of slavery, according to my study of history in this country. Yeah. So, but that's all I got. Tando Radio Show is coming up here. Again, I'll keep, of course, you updated on these two stories we shared today, the police execution, a wheelchair bound Jeremy McDowell, and the North Carolina NAACP standing, bringing families together regardless of their so-called racial classification, economic status, and whatnot, to file a complaint against Harnett County Sheriff's Department for systemic racism, classism, and just brutality. They practicing slavery. That's all it is, man. And they're calling on the Justice Department, indeed filed a formal complaint. So I learned a lot from him. I did not know, about all it takes is a string of media reports to provide evidence to trigger a federal investigation at, you know, where people are really being preyed upon, really being mistreated, outright being murdered by so-called law enforcers. So that's all I got for you today. Remember, BTR News does not broadcast on Wednesdays, but I will be on air on New Abolitionist Radio, where we discuss 21st century slavery and human trafficking behind the enemy lines, well, actually on a global scale. So that's at 8 o'clock p.m. immediately following Tando Radio Show, but we will kick off live streaming with a media partner of their program, Tanya Free and Friends Talk Show, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Black Talk Radio. Then Tando at 6, New Abolitionist Radio at 8, and then I believe it is the Lotus Place Radio concluding live streaming at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday night. All right. Recognize the fact that we live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc., a country that has never abolished slavery, that is actually not even, I wouldn't even technically call it a country, but a corporation that never abolished slavery, still practicing slavery, and they always on the lookout for new slaves so that you can become the capital of another man's profit. With that said, be safe out there, and peace and blessings to all.